Hello, welcome again to RTE's Your Politics podcast, our weekly look at politics from Leinster House.
There is trouble in paradise. The government parties have fallen out with each other.
No, we're only a year and a half in government.
In
terms of this arrangement.
There's a constant charge against me, because he has no case against us when it comes to
subs.
My charge against him is he's obsessed with innuendo and conspiracy theories.
There is something incredibly demoralising and abstract about this annual pantomime.
Yeah, we're in the Houses of Parliament on national television.
Hello, and we begin Your Politics podcast this week, not in Dublin, but in Strasbourg, and our own Mary Regan making her way back home from the last meeting of this European Parliament.
It is a fabulous day in Strasbourg, and they've just wound up from the last plenary session of the European Parliament before the elections next month, 5 weeks away, I think. And there's definitely an end of term feel. A lot of the UK MEPs in particular, you know, shaking hands, saying goodbye. Some people making their last speeches in the Parliament, and some MEPs not knowing whether they'll be coming back or not. And not just because they're at the mercy of the electorate, but there's also some UK MEPs who don't know whether, you know, if they get elected, whether they'll be here and how long they might be here for.
Well, indeed, we were talking on the news at one with Fiona Mitchell about the polls from the UK. They seem to suggest that Nigel Farage will be back with his new Brexit party if the European elections go ahead there. But the question, I suppose, will be for how long and whether they'll be voting come next October.
Yeah, and Donald Tusk was talking about keeping the dream alive that Britain might remain in the European Union. But for some, it was more of a nightmare scenario because Nigel Farage was standing up in the Parliament this week saying, I bet you thought you'd never get rid of me, but guess what? I'm going to be here, I'm going to be back, and I'm going to bring many people back with me. So he's certainly feeling very confident about his prospects. And, you know, a lot of talk around here as to whether this is a good thing or not that the UK MEPs will be back in the Parliament. Donald Tusk, addressing the Parliament, he said that he thinks it's a good thing that the UK will be taking part in the election. He said that they should not be treated as a second-class country by any means, and they have all the rights to be there, and he hopes that they'll always be there, and he hopes Brexit might be cancelled. He said he's very much keeping that dream alive. But others, the Brexit coordinator in the Parliament, Eva Hofstad, was saying that he thinks that they shouldn't be coming and that their participation in this election is going to poison the European elections. And he was critical of EU leaders who agreed at their summit last week to extend Brexit until October. So nobody knows how long their mandate is going to be for. And some people are saying, well, why should they have a say? Why should they have votes when their country doesn't want to be here?
Mary, give us a sense of the shape of this outgoing Parliament and, more importantly, what to look for in terms of the Parliament that's going to get returned.
Yeah, well, I was here also in February, and back then there was a very strong sense that migration in particular might be a big issue in the election campaigns, and also that it was likely to return a large group of right-wing nationalist parties, populists and those anti-Europe. That sense doesn't seem to be so strong this time. While there is a recognition that this Parliament will change, the composition, the nature of it will change, there doesn't seem to be such a strong sense that these parties will gain a foothold. But there's no doubt that when they come back here in July, it will be a different Parliament. One of the interesting dynamics here is that many of the Eurosceptic parties, parties who would have traditionally been in favour of leaving the European Union, ironically, I suppose, because of the Brexit and what they've seen happening there, they've almost shifted their focus to, they now want to stay in the EU, but they want to change it from the inside. So they are promising to shake things up. And all the polls across the country show that there's still a huge number of voters undecided. So people really don't know what to expect, I guess, from these elections.
Yeah, it really will be. And also how much common cause. I know the Italians have been looking to set up some kind of Europe-wide coalition of populist parties, but it's not going very well so far. In terms of the big names, Mary, because we're moving into an era now where we're familiar with European politicians' names. So the names we know now, Weber, Verhofstadt, Tajani, Tusk, Juncker, who are the ones to watch in terms of how they are going to be shaping the new Parliament as you see it?
Yeah, well, Manfred Weber, as you mentioned, he was in Ireland in Wexford, Fine Gael, Ardèche recently. He is seeking to become the European Commission president. And that's a very interesting battle, as it were, because he will have the support of the EPP members. So that's what he's relying on to get this position. But a problem for the EPP is, firstly, that he will lose numbers. It now has 115 MEPs. Firstly, it'll lose numbers, but there also seems to be a sort of breakdown in coherence in some ways, largely over the presence of the Hungarian Viktor Orban's party, Fidesz. They have 12 MEPs in that party, and that party is currently suspended from the EPP. But interestingly, if it is welcomed back in and it stays in the EPP, there might be some other parties who will object to that and who could break away. And if it leaves, then that party loses the strong representation that it currently has. So whatever they decide, the EPP is in some ways divided, and there's some bit of internal conflict going on, and conflict within the EPP, mm-hmm. of course, will mean divisions within the European Parliament. So he is one name, and there's also now Michel Barnier, who's the Brexit negotiator. He is one name that is being discussed. His election to that position of the European Commission president would rely on other centre-left groups, but also, again, it depends on how they can manage to coordinate their votes after the election. So that actually won't be voted on until October, even though the Parliament convenes in July. So that's when a lot of the real politicking, as it were, will start. But an interesting question is whether the British MEPs will have any say in that. Will they still be here? Will they get to vote?
And lots of interesting questions. Will this be a big breakthrough election for the Greens and so on? I saw the other night that Manfred Weber was debating with Frans Timmermans. Of course, there's this whole question of, you know, will the Parliament decide or will the Council decide in relation to that? They did disagree on the EPP, but one thing both were agreed on, and I don't know whether because it's gorgeous there in Strasbourg, you'll agree now, Mary. Both agreed on, yes, the Parliament should be moving to Strasbourg still once a month.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a trek of myself included, but an awful lot of people. I mean, literally a train leaves Brussels and travels to Strasbourg once a month. It's actually in the European treaties that it has to sit here for 12 sittings every year, and it's seen as, you know, the French capital, as it were, as of the European Union, and it's also close to the German border. In some ways, it's hard to justify the big, you know, strain on resources and movement of people that this brings, but it's definitely not for moving, because if it was to change, there would have to be change to treaties. That would mean referendums in countries like Ireland, and does anyone really want any referendums on European issues at this point in time?
Okay, well, you'll have lots more on this in your European Parliament report, won't you?
Yes, I will, yeah. European Parliament report, we're actually speaking to Sean Kelly and Leonie Rita, and also Seb Dance, who's a Labour Party MEP, and I just speak to him about what it's like for him, because, you know, one minute as an MEP for the UK, he's planning his career, planning life after European politics, the next minute organising an election campaign.
Okay, and during May, in fact, in the run-up to the election, we'll be talking again, Mary, because we'll be doing more on the shape of the European Parliament and what to be looking for Europe-wide in that campaign. But for the moment, I'll say enjoy the little bit of sunshine you're getting and safe journey.
Okay, thanks. Au revoir.
RTE's political team with me this week, Micheál Lehane, Adele McAllister and David. I've blanked on your surname, David Murphy. You see, that's, we're all DMOB happy today because it's sunny, and it's been kind of a week of celebration here in Leinster House, really, hasn't it, with the Nancy Pelosi visit, Micheál?
Yeah, it was. The early part of the week couldn't have got better, really, and it followed on from all those effusive words from Michel Barnier and Angela Merkel in recent weeks, and this is the icing on the cake, really. And I think even people who were experienced in these types of visits were a little shocked that what was said privately and what was said publicly was exactly the same, chimed exactly, and the forceful nature of it did take people by a little bit by surprise. There was commitments on all kinds of things, and in the obvious one around Brexit and preventing that trade deal in the future, but also a lot of confidence and hopes that the E3 visa thing could be progressed fairly quickly in the aftermath of this visit, which could see up to 5,000 Irish people a year getting visas to work in the US. But the joie de vivre around Leinster House yesterday was quite something.
And of course, we even had rock stars up in the gallery, David.
Yeah, we had U2 there, and for avid U2 fans like me, I mean, Bono has that star quality, and you could see among the politicians, you know, they liked it too. But just to Micheál's point, it's really interesting when you see the way the Irish government, and particularly the work that the diplomatic service has put in, beginning to pay dividends in comparison to what's happening with the British government, particularly when you see the way Angela Merkel came here. Leo Varadkar gets an audience with the French President Emmanuel Macron. And then we have Nancy Pelosi here as well. I mean, it shows that to a certain extent, the Irish have the ear of other countries. Very different to what's going on in the UK.
And it was actually even highlighted, wasn't it, when we see, was it the Times of London was reporting, there had been various reports about Pelosi had led her delegation to have a meeting with the hardline ERG group. Apparently it got very hot and heavy, and there were exchanges with Marc Francois, whom we all know and love. But it was really interesting that this, the American delegation rejecting the line that was coming from the Brexiteers about the border, the problems with the border and the Good Friday Agreement being concocted by Ireland. And particularly interesting when you see they're still talking over there about the Malthouse Compromise and alternative relation arrangements, when even their own HMRC is saying this cannot be done, does not exist. There is no MaxFac alternative technology there right now. The contrast, fascinating, wasn't it?
The contrast is fascinating, and you just wonder if this pause that's now happening in British politics over Easter will make people take stock and perhaps take a slightly different view of things. One thing that was very interesting was a YouGov poll in the UK showing potentially a very strong showing for Nigel Farage's new Brexit party. Will the Conservatives and the Labour Party want to see Nigel Farage do very well in the context of a European election? Could it prompt them to go quickly to move a withdrawal agreement through Westminster to ensure that doesn't happen and that they don't have to take part in European elections? It'd be very interesting to watch that over the coming weeks.
But the American visitors did, though, didn't they? That thing about trying to understand the situation, you have to understand it by the past, but yet live it looking to the future. But they did bring a kind of a new light back on those great moments in the past around the Good Friday Agreement and kind of elevated the language. Yes, there has been solidarity and understanding mm-hmm. on the European front, but there was something of that American investment that was revoiced about the Good Friday Agreement and the quotes from John Hume again about breaking down walls in people's hearts. The language changed, and the great achievement and skill of the Good Friday Agreement was articulated in a way that we hadn't been hearing recently in that adversarial debate around Brexit, and that could prove significant.
Yeah, when hope and history rhymed. Let's talk about something else now that's turning almost into a bit of an episode of history itself, in the sense that it's gone on so long here in Leinster House. And Adele, this is the row about the Judicial Appointments Bill, which, well, tell us why it all came to a head in the Shannon this week.
Yeah, as you say, Áine, everything was going great this week. We had the distinguished visitors, Nancy Pelosi in, getting ready to address the Dáil, but this huge row was happening over in the Shannon. It's the Judicial Appointments Commission. We've talked about it here before on the podcast. Massively controversial bill, basically changing how judges are appointed. It's been championed by Independent Minister Shane Ross, but Independent Alliance, I should say, Shane Ross, but it's Charlie Flanagan who's Justice Minister Charlie Flanagan, who's tasked with getting it through. It's been in the Shannon since last June, 86 hours, 25 minutes, and patience finally snapped and they decided they'd use the guillotine. Guillotine is basically, it's a rule that the government have, and they can cut short a debate, essentially, and allows them to kind of push it on to the next stage. And they decided that this was the week and this is the day that they would do it. But they were foiled because the government probably doesn't need reminding. They do not have the numbers in the Shannon. So when the leader of the Shannon, Fine Gael's Gerry Buttermer, announced in the morning that they were going to cut short, they were going to effectively use the guillotine that afternoon, then immediately the senators proposed an alternative order of business that didn't feature that bill being guillotined. And the vote in favour of that new order of business was a tiebreaker, 25-25. Then there was a walkthrough vote, and it sometimes happens that the vote changes. So you have an electronic mm-hmm. vote, which gives you one result. Then we essentially take the vote again and all the senators walk through and they do it in writing. And sometimes the result can change because somebody can change their mind or the wrong button might have been push. So in this case, it swung 26-24 against the government. So that was the end of the guilting.
Do you think we'd be hearing more about this, though, after Easter?
Yeah, it's not clear, given those numbers. There's 60 senators. Fine Gael have just 20. You have 15 or 16 independents, some of them vehemently opposed to this, including Michael McDougall, former Attorney General, a very formidable legal brain. So with those numbers, it's not clear whether they can use the guillotine again. But it was something the following day, just as timing would have it, the next morning, the Taoiseach had to make his annual appearance before the Senate, when the senators get to tackle them about all of the issues that are happening. And of course, this came up, and it was independent David Norris who put it to the Taoiseach: are you going to do this again, and why did you do it? And here's a flavour of that exchange.
I'd like to ask the Taoiseach, would he now restate very clearly his opposition to the use of the guillotine in parliamentary tactics?
If this House believes that 120 hours for the Judicial Appointments Bill is not enough, that is your decision. It is entirely open to the House to spend as many hours as the House decides debating the bill.
So you heard that there, Anya. So really, just it's not clear whether they do have the numbers to actually push it through. They're kind of stuck again on this.
Okay, so this is one that will be coming up again after Easter. And it's interesting watching them all rise to Easter and head off for a badly needed break. You do get the sense people are sick of Brexit and would be glad of a break from all of that for a while. But looking at the debates, particularly on housing as the thaw breaks up, these are issues that the opposition are going to be pressing in the May elections, Micheál. The government would be, they've been having a good Brexit diplomatically so far, full employment, economy doing well. That would be the contest, do you think?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a clear part of it. And the government really hasn't made any significant progress on this. If anything, the homeless numbers clearly have got worse. But it affects so many levels, doesn't it? There's the affordability piece and the fact that people who had hoped to get on the property ladder now are facing battles with investment funds. We also saw the issue around funds that are making people homeless. Is the opposition allegation in relation to that the security that tenants need isn't being provided through legislation. The government making the point that that's just not possible, because if they were to take away the incentives for investors, yes, you would have greater rights perhaps for tenants, but it would be in a shrinking market. So the shrinking supply would be there. And that's a fool's paradise, is how Simon Coveney said it. But as an election pitch, as something to sell, it's hard to see how the government can sell progress around the housing issue compared to this point exactly 5 years ago.
I think it's really interesting, this question of these funds coming in and buying housing, because this has happened because during the crisis, the Irish state realised there was no investment coming into property and construction, and that was making the crisis worse. And they created the environment for foreign funds to come in and invest. And that's why NAMA ended up being able to sell all the assets which had fallen into the lap of the Irish taxpayer. They created that system, and now those investors are continuing to invest. The property prices are going up, and suddenly the politicians are saying, oh, hold on for a second here, they're buying up all the housing, this is bad. Well, you know, it was politicians in the first place who created that scenario. I think we need to think about why all that is happening. And I'm not necessarily sure that you can say, stop right now, these buyers can't come in and buy this stuff, because you've got to treat all buyers equally.
And not necessarily the same politicians, though I'm sure they'd argue. One other thing we did learn a little bit more about, and again, something we're going
to... Well,
actually,
it was Fianna Fáil who created NAMA, who did introduce the mechanism for those investors to come in, who are now being quite critical of those investors coming in and buying up housing.
There's no urgency to review it either. That has been the Fianna Fáil call, but the word from government is that nothing will happen before the budget. So this is going to roll on for another few months anyway.
And it's also about the contest, isn't it, between the big institutional investors and the small, you know, the private landlord, and, you know, the balance and the way the state treats them, and also what that does to people who are trying to buy a house. But anyhow.
And the descriptions are avian too. It's cuckoos and vultures are the key words to describe these battles that are going on at the moment.
Yeah, it's for the birds.
Oh gosh, that's not even worth it with you. Talk to me about broadband instead.
Okay, broadband. Really interesting this week, Leo Varadkar coming out confirming that figure first reported by RTE's Micheál Lehane of €3 billion for the cost of the national broadband scheme. But in his when he was taking leaders' questions, it's pretty clear they're still some months away from reaching a decision. They previously said that their objective was to bring a plan to cabinet before Easter. They've got some way to go. Leo Varadkar, from what he was saying, he seems to be indicating the plan that they're working on now is distinct from the original plan, which had a price tag of €512 million. And look, it's going to be six times bigger in terms of the expenditure. But if we look at the report we had in the 6 o'clock news this week of the gentleman who's running the gardening centre, who can't open the attachments on the emails with people's lists of plants that they want to purchase, and this is in rural Ireland, that it really shows why this problem is cutting off many businesses in the regions. And while if you look at a lot of the literature the government produces about doing business in the regions, they talk about the quality of life and so forth. Without broadband, you just cannot run a business in the 21st century.
What's your take on the politics of this, Micheál?
Yeah, I think there was a few things. Some people who might be fairly close to this felt they couldn't go with anything this week, couldn't move it forward because they will have to be around Leinster House to defend this when it is. The decision is made ultimately because of the costs, because of the delays. So they will wait until closer to the European and local elections. At the same time, I mean, there is a reality in the aftermath of Denis Nocton's resignation that there was a question of maybe should they go back to the start and all that. There seems to be a political reality now that this a decision of some kind or some signal, a strong signal, has to be sent out before those elections. And that's going to happen, whatever the cost, that politically it cannot go on much longer without commitment to deliver.
And I suppose it's a tricky one for opposition, isn't it? Because they have to be supporting the broadband for rural Ireland but opposing the government on the way they've gone about it. Yeah?
Well, isn't that the story of the confidence and supply agreement?
Oh, right. Well, there we're going to I'll tell you what we're going to do this week, seeing as how Easter is coming and we're all going off to eat some chocolate now. We're going to play you out with a little bit of David Murphy's favourite political star turn this week with a little bit of You Too. Your Politics will be back with you again after Easter. Thanks to Jack Good on production. Please subscribe to Your Politics and leave a review. We'd love to hear from you. Lots to talk about when we're back with you next time. The heart is a blue, shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room.